As a homeowner, I can't help myself. I'm always thinking about fixing this and changing that. For the money, for the beauty, for the knowledge and the peace of mind, it's about time for the Love My Renovation Project with Mike Young.
My renovation project, Mike Young. Glad to be here. Happy that you're here. Well, we're going to discuss all things regarding renovation projects with either the FHA 203K, the home style renovation mortgage, and the VA renovation loan products, to name a few. If you haven't already heard, VA has a new product out there. So, veterans, when you're buying a house, you now can get the money to fix it up at the same time that you're purchasing it, and still get 100% financing. So check with your local VA lender or call me and I'll give you the name of a few you can check out. Fannie Mae's recently added manufactured homes to their renovation products, and FHA's had them for years. We're looking at one right now where they have a permanent foundation, a perimeter, concrete perimeter foundation, and a double wide sitting on it. The double wide is just complete. So they're thinking about taking the entire house and lifting it off of that foundation, bringing a new double wide and setting it down on that exact same place. And that's perfectly fine under the FHA program. While most 203Ks go off without a hitch, from time to time you may find yourself as a homeowner with no one to talk to that's on your side. Nobody to talk to. Everybody is giving you the runaround. Nobody's telling you which way to go. We had one recently where the lender, all they could say was, go to arbitration. Go to arbitration. That's all you have to do. Just go to arbitration. Well, going to arbitration is not all that easy, and it is expensive. So if you're going to arbitration, which is an option, then you need to be aware that it's going to cost you an arm and a leg and a contractor, and the contractor is not willing in this case. So what do you do? Well, first off, the contractor was vetted by the lender. So guess who's got the deep pockets? Anyway, if they didn't vet him properly, then they may want to be more interested in just telling you to go to arbitration, especially when the contractor's not going to pay his half to go to arbitration. So anyway, if you need someone to talk to, go to 203k911.com and let us know the issues that you're facing. Be happy to talk to you. There's no charge for the first calls. There may not be a charge at all for as many calls as you need. So if you've got a topic that you'd like us to discuss on the radio in more specific terms, or if you don't want to discuss it on the radio, you want to talk about it in more specific terms, and you don't want to be out in front of the world, then feel free to get on to 203konline.com or 203k911.com and send us an email through our contact form. Just let us know as much as you can so that we're not having that first conversation totally blind and having to take all that in at once. It's better if you give us a little forewarning and tell us what's going on, and we can formulate an opinion and give you some answers that you need right then at that first call. Saves you time and money. Anyway, questions that came up this past week via email or calls from our consultant listeners. The lender is not going to allow school taxes to be included as a soft cost. Can they do that? Well, the short answer is they're loaning their own money, so they can pretty much do anything they want to. They call it a supplemental requirement. They have full right to do just literally anything they want to. They can change the guideline, make it tougher. It's funny how they always point at the guideline when they're talking to you as the consultant, but they never want to talk about the guideline when it's them violating it. So just realize that it happens. They do have the right. It's their money. They're loaning. It's not FHA's money. FHA is just an insurance company. So lenders have the every right to change the rules on their side. But in practice, they most likely do what you want if you provide them or present it properly. Give them enough information to make the decision in your favor. So in this case, you've got a school tax. Yes, it's a bedroom tax. So maybe if you called it a bedroom tax, you know, for each bedroom you add, in our state, they charge $15,000 per bedroom. We were successful a few years back when a guy was adding a new master bedroom upstairs, a whole second story, and it was a master bedroom and a Jack and Jill bedroom. So he's got two bathrooms and three bedrooms that he was adding. He was so proud that he was able to do this, but when he showed me the blueprints, I said, why don't you change this to study, that to your den, and this to a rumpus room? No. I definitely want the master bedroom. And I want, my kids are going to move up here to this bedroom, and we're taking one bedroom downstairs. So they're really only adding two bedrooms. And I said, do it your way. If you've got an extra $30,000 you want to throw at the wind, or have your architect change these names. So he reluctantly went to his architect and had him change the names on a set of blueprints that they took to the city for permits. And the city looked at those permits and said, that looks like a master bedroom, and this looks like a Jack and Jill bedrooms, not a den and a rumpus room. And he says, look, we got three bedrooms downstairs. We don't need any more bedrooms. Oh, I see you do. Okay. Well, I don't know where you got this, but somebody just saved you $45,000 because it looked at first like you were adding three bedrooms. And he says, no, we weren't. We aren't. And when that guy got home, he called me just tickle pain. Thank you. So sometimes it's better to let the contractor take the plans in if you don't know it, because that never would have been three bedrooms. You're taking one bedroom out downstairs. You're only adding two. In reality. But we saved him, and that's probably why he was as happy as he was. So the key is always pay attention to what it is you're trying to do, present it properly, and you may save yourself some money. So in this case, it's a bedroom tax. In order to get that bedroom built, you have to pay $15,000 as part of your permit process. So it's really $15,000 tacked onto your permits. So can you figure a way that you might be able to say it and present it to the lender so that it looks more like a permit fee? Or change your blueprints and call it a study or a den and see if you can save that money when you go down to the building inspection department. If it's upstairs and you're putting a new bedroom up there, you want to call it a bedroom, please do. But if you're taking a bedroom out downstairs in order to put the staircase up, then you're, in fact, taking one out and putting one in. You have a zero tax situation. So be careful in how you present your information to your lender and to the city, for that matter. If you do it all properly, you won't have any tax for your client. And that $1,000 fee they gave you is well earned by saving them $15,000 to $45,000, okay? So be careful when you're talking to the underwriters. Don't be pushy. Be sensible and lay out your argument. Be ready when you ask the questions to answer them properly. But realize that the lender is loaning their own money, and you can't tell them what to do. The best you're going to do is convince them that this is the proper thing to do. So be careful. Tread lightly. Let's see. I've got one here. I turned my consultant report in, and there were two rewrites. They had me modify a comment to suit their underwriting. They didn't like the way I worded it. So I changed it. And then 2 days later, they came back and had me change another sentence. Why can't they do all this in one go-around? I changed the second sentence. Now it's 3 days later. They're ready to close escrow, and I'm the bad guy because I threw $500 in for permits when the contractor failed to tell me what the permit fees were that he wanted added. Well, now they're $1,700 and they want me to change my report. Just do it. Don't be the guy that argues every point every time that comes up. It's probably not in your best interest to be known as the arguer. Be known as the guy that gets things done. If they need a change, just make it. I've got a couple of contract or consultants right now nationally, one in Tennessee and one in Missouri. Missouri or Mississippi, one or the other. And the lenders told me don't ever use those two guys again. Don't ever use them. It's just too hard. They turned a report in. They figure it's over. It's done. The money's earned. And they're not willing to fix things that they had made errors on. So you don't want to be taken off of lists. Lenders get to choose who they don't want. Who they do want has to be on the list. But just because you're on the list does not guarantee your work. Okay, so be the guy that gets along and just get it done as quickly as possible and turn it in. I got a call, I don't know, it's 10 or 15 years ago from HUD, from my HUD guy, scolding me for putting permit fees into line item 35. And I hear there's a lot of people, particularly on the East Coast, that are receiving training, and they're being told to put permit fees as a line item 35. Just add permit fees right there. No, you don't. The call I got 10 or 15 years ago from HUD says, Mike, they were ripping me because they said I had put permit fees in line item 35 when I hadn't. So I asked them, would you kindly read the sentence you're referring to where I added fees and tell me how many dollars were added? Oh, okay, I can do that. Right here it says, though permits cannot be listed as a line item in, according to the guideline, we're asking the contractor to provide the permit amount so it can be added to the recap. Oh, my God, Mr. Young, you didn't do anything wrong. I said, are you going to send me a letter then, unchastising me? He said, no, that's not going to happen. I said, okay, so the next time it does happen, this is my warning. And you can't come at me with another letter, because that will be the first time, if it ever happens. And they just kind of snickered and said, sorry about that. I'm sure if I was in front of him, he'd have that embarrassed, sheepish grin on his face. But once he read it out loud, he realized that I didn't put price in there. There was no dollar amount there. But I've got people calling me that are doing business with new lenders on the East Coast, and these lenders are demanding they put it in there. At that point, say, no, you want to deal with HUD? Then fine. But they go in the maximum mortgage worksheet. They go on the recap of the subtotal. But it does not go in any line items on the scope of work. It is not part of the scope of work, even though it's considered soft cost. And if we plug them into soft costs where they belong, they will be paid out to the contractor at 100% with no 10% holdback. If, in fact, they're wrongly put as a line item, they will get 90% less 10% holdback. And the lender's going to spot it and put it on the maximum mortgage worksheet, so the client is borrowing the money twice for the same permits. So don't do that. Anyway, today we're going to be talking primarily about HUD's consultant duties. And we're running up on the clock, I see, already. Wow, this is going fast. Please call in today if you want to be part of the show at 888-627-6008 and be part of our show. We'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk about the consultant duties. What do you do for your money?
.com. If you're having issues with your renovation project, we may be able to assist you. It's nice to know you have a knowledgeable person on your side. We recently had a client that had a lender telling them that the problem wasn't theirs, but it was the correspondent lender's. Ultimately, they agreed it was their problem and remedied the issue quickly. Most issues have been handled without a fee. Visit 203k911.com now and let's fix your problems.
Hey, welcome back. This is Mike Young. If you want to be part of the show again, call us at 888-627-6008. We are going to be, if we're not already, on live radio very shortly. I believe we're on a couple stations right now, but iHeartRadio is picking us up, I hear. And we will be on live radio in the next week or so. The consultant duties, as outlined in the handbook 4000.1, which is our current guideline, they must perform the following duties in accordance with the requirements set forth below. One, every consultant must offer to do a feasibility analysis. They say feasibility study in the most recent guideline. It's study not. It's feasibility analysis, if required by the borrower. And I say this because I got a call from Oregon or Washington State. One of my guys or two of my guys up there called down, and they were concerned because they're being reviewed by a consultant that had got the M&M contract with HUD to review consultants' works. See, every consultant is supposed to have 10% of their work reviewed. And what they do is they have a company that gets that contract for a price. They review all these consultant work write-ups. And they're looking for things that are wrong, and so they can slap you in the nose a little bit, tell you you're doing it wrong. But they were being told they had to have a feasibility study or feasibility analysis for each and every 203K work write-up. That is false and misleading. And for them to come out as the authority, the person checking on you, scared the heck out of all the guys that they're looking at, because here they are, they don't know the guideline, they haven't bothered to read the guideline, and they're telling people what they think the guideline is. You need to pull the guideline out and read it. Okay, so a feasibility analysis is only if it's requested by the borrower or the mortgagee, just to see if it's feasible financially. So where I see feasibilities most often is when the borrower is getting ready to buy the house, and he has no idea where to make an offer. It's not listed on the MLS. It's a friend that's selling the house, and they need to know exactly how much is it going to cost to fix this house up, to bring it to HUD's minimum property standards, MPS, minimum property standards. So that's when they would call and say, hey, I need to get a feasibility analysis. And what that is a quick and dirty estimate of how much is it going to cost to fix it. A single-family house, I spend about 30 minutes, and you can clock that. I mean, it has been 29 to 31 minutes ever since I've been doing them at the site. I have the answer when I finish that 30 minutes, but I don't typically give it to them. I want to think about it on the drive home. I want to write it up. Usually I have that personally, have it back to my client within 2 hours from arrival back to my office. So usually it's the same day or the next morning, depending on what time of day I did that inspection. But a feasibility is not required on every project. Now that I've said that, Florida, we've got a lender there that is the hot shot, the best guy in the world, he thinks. Just ask him. And he says, I need a feasibility. What he's not asking you for a feasibility. He's asking you for a work write-up. So there is some confusion around the country between a SOR, a scope of renovation, scope of work, and a feasibility. They are not the same. A feasibility is a down and dirty quick bid. It always has a 20% contingency on it by the guideline. You put 20% on it because you're guesstimating. You're going through there and says it's got five broken windows. You're going to put in a price to fix five broken windows. And then when it comes down to the contingency, you're going to throw 20% contingency to give yourself some leeway as the consultant. So feasibility study is a down and dirty, not enough to go out and get bids from. If you're giving them all the information they know to get bids from and they decide not to buy your finished product and to walk, you've just aced yourself out of a full fee for doing that. Your full consultation has a detailed bid specification and a bid. A feasibility is not detailed enough to go get bids. I hope that makes sense to most of the newer consultants that are listening in today. So if you need more information on that, even if you took your training elsewhere, please feel free to ask. We help everyone. We help our people first, but we help everyone that calls. Okay, so this is where I catch a lot of people. I do a lot of reviews of consultant work around the country. Lenders will send me a report and say, look at this report and tell me what you think. And that's a free service. You know, we look at it and give them a quick opinion. But the biggest fault that we see in these days is there's a consultant inspection. In order for you to create a scope of work, you have to look at the property. You have to look at the property and determine what does it need to do to bring this to HUD's minimum property standards. Okay, so as you're bringing that to HUD's minimum property standards, then you need a report. One, you can't have any rodents, dry rot, termites, and other infestation on the property. Well, not everybody is a termite inspector. Okay, so you may require a termite inspection if you're not a termite inspector, because only termite inspectors or WDO, wood destroying organisms inspector, is supposed to tell you those things, even though you can see them, little termite critters running up the wall, the basement wall, and their little termite tubes. If you're not approved as a termite inspector, you may want to put that on to a professional who is trained in it. HUD called me a few years back and said, Mike, since you train people a lot and you're all over the country, I wanted to make sure that you got this word out to everybody. If you're an engineer, you can be the engineer on the project. But if you're a consultant and a termite inspector, you cannot be both on the same project. And I'm listening to this, and I'm just melting. I'm thinking, what in the heck are you thinking about? That's a double standard. I said, I'm not going to tell people, if they are a qualified termite inspector, that they can't do the termite inspection on this property. They have a code of ethics, and they have a standards of practice, just like we do. They can't just throw a bunch of work at you in order to drive their fee up, because their fee doesn't go up that fast. Okay, so if I'm an engineer and I can be the engineer on this project, and I'm a termite inspector, I can also do the work on this project, and that's what I argued with HUD, and I did not buckle, and they never said anything more about it. But we have to be sure that there's no termites, and the only way to do that properly is with your termite inspection. And if you're a termite inspector, all the more power to you. Go ahead and make that inspection. Yes, you can charge for it separately. Do not bill it with your to escrow as part of your consultation. If you want to bill it to escrow for some other reason or because that's what you always do, feel free to do what you normally do. Just don't make the bill part of your overall bill for the consultation. Okay, just don't show it in there. So you're going to make sure there's no rodents, dry rot, termites, or other infestation on the property. We found bees like you wouldn't believe in a 150-year-old house. They had been nesting or building their hive inside the wall for years and years and years. And I think he got 150 pounds of honey out of that wall. Anyway, you have to be sure that there's no defects that will affect the health and or safety of the occupants. So if there's a broken steps, you got to fix them. You can't ignore them, and you can't say, well, I'm going to fix them myself. I'm a carpenter, and I'm just going to fix those things myself. That don't cut any ice. That doesn't cut anything. They need to be part of your scope of work. And if you do them, you can't get paid the labor anyway. So you got to make sure there exists adequate structural heating, plumbing, electric, and roofing systems, and that there are upgrades to the structure's thermal protection when necessary. In other words, if there's no insulation in the attic, you need to put insulation in the attic. Now, it used to be the interpretation was if they had any insulation in the attic, even R19 or R13, that you didn't have to add anymore. But today, no. You have to bring it to R30 or R38, depending on your area. So those things have to be part of your scope of work. Now, if they already got a contractor's bid and he didn't put those in, then he's going to put those in. All right. The consultant must prepare a report on the current condition of the property that categorically examines the structure utilizing the 35-point checklist. Let that sink in. We're going to come back to that in just a few minutes and go over it in depth, more depth. But the consultant must prepare a report. This is missing in most of the consultant reports that I see today. Not my trainees, but let's just say if you're not putting a home inspection, you can upsell the project if they want to buy a full home inspection. But if they already own the house and they're doing a refi to do some remodeling, they don't want a home inspection. And you shouldn't be telling them they have to have one. You're supposed to give them the free one that comes with your consultation. Okay? You must prepare a report on the current condition of the property. We're going to go over the things that you might say in that report when we come back from this break. So stick around, stay tuned, and we'll be right back after we hear from our sponsor.
Thinking of becoming a 203K consultant? Contact us to see if you qualify. Home inspectors, contractors, architects, and engineers most likely qualify. Create an additional profit center using your existing knowledge base. For more information, visit 203ksoftware.com and you'll be glad you did.
We're back with you. Thanks for sticking around. The consultant must prepare a report on the current condition of the property. That's part of your consultation. That report is part of your consultation. The good news is the Homestyle renovation mortgage does not require that. Okay. The report must address any deficiencies that exist and certify the condition of all major systems like the electrical, plumbing, heating, roofing, and structural. The consultant must determine the repairs or improvements that are required to meet the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, their minimum property requirements or minimum property standards, MPS. Okay. So I review consultant write-ups and reports all the time, and in most cases, there is no 35-point checklist. Okay. On our software, you can't write the report without seeing the place to write your 35-point checklist, and your bid specs are on the same page, one over the other. So as you're writing your 35-point checklist, and you're in masonry, for example, tell us what you saw. In the top half of that screen that you, on our software, you're going to see a big box, and you're going to say something like, this is a concrete perimeter foundation exists and appears adequate. That's all. Does it have foundation bolts? Yes or no? If it doesn't, then you're going to go down to the job specs, and you're going to provide, install foundation bolts. And you're going to tell them how far the spacing is. I'm not going to tell you right now. Look it up. We're going to tell you where to find that answer shortly. But I'm looking to see a report that shows the current condition of the property. So if I don't see that, you're not doing a 203K consultation as the guideline says you should. Okay, it's about time that if I'm working for HUD, cared enough about this to actually look at these things, but instead they're hiring people to go out and review your project's work and tell you that you have to have a feasibility study on every project, and you don't. Okay, so you got to be careful. The people who are reviewing need to be reviewed. Somebody needs to look at the product they're putting out. On our 35-point checklist, the first item, of course, is masonry. Second item is siding. So quite often in California, we're seeing transite siding. So you might say something like transite siding exists and appears in poor condition, therefore requires some repairs. If you said something like that, you would also see a comment that transite siding is commonly known to contain asbestos. In addition, you'd have a repair in your specifications of repairs that said how you're going to go about that repair. Now, they do make siding that resembles the old transite siding and is made of a rubber product now. Once you put them up there, you get the right design, the one that matches yours, and take the broken ones out carefully because they have asbestos. They have to be treated with the proper EPA RRP methods. You can't just go pull them off. If you get caught doing that, the fine is $32,500 per person on the job at that time. That can easily bankrupt a contractor. It's just not worth it. So by having on our software the home inspection type comments in the upper portion of the screen, and then the lower portion is the repairs, as you talk about something needing a repair, you merely go right below and you write the repair order. I had a good friend of mine in Los Angeles who's been using every version of our software since 1994. He and I were talking not too long ago when he said, oh, I lost a job. I couldn't get the report written fast enough. I only had the home inspection written. I was confused. I said, so you opened up the program and you wrote the home inspection comments in all 35 categories, and not once did you say, this has a broken window, and you go right down below and repair the broken window? He said, you're kidding. I said, what do you mean I'm kidding? And he says, if I'd have done it that way, I'd have been through with the bid specs as soon as I was through with the home inspection. I would have earned my entire fee. I said, duh. That's a fact, Jack. So he had been misusing the software all those years. You know, we do have a user's manual. It is placed at 203konline.com. Scroll down to the bottom. You're going to see some handy downloads. There you will see our complete user's manual with screenshots of all the different things you're going to do. See on the software. The software is extremely easy to learn. I had a Texas consultant that used every other software on the market before he finally ordered ours, and I got the nicest email from him saying, I don't for the life of me know why I used yours last, but I used, you know, five different softwares, and none of them did everything I wanted to do, so I kept trying. And I tried yours the other day, and it was the easiest to learn, the most complete, and I'm so sorry that I didn't try it first. But we put a lot of effort into the software, and the people who use it, I think, are extremely happy with it. Anyway, under 15, let's look at the rest of these sections. I'm not going to go through each and every section, but exterior doors is section 15. I was very much involved with the CSI, Construction Specification Institute, but in the heating and air conditioning ductwork when they first started. I was a HVAC engineer, and I was very into getting all the specifications and helping them write the specs for heating and air conditioning ductwork. They got all of our spec sheets placed in that group early in the game. CSI has one category for appurtenances: windows, doors, any openings in the structure are one category. But in HUD, the 35 categories, we have a separate section for windows, a separate section for exterior doors, a separate section for interior doors. So when you're looking at exterior doors as an example, and that includes sliding glass doors, your garage doors with the automatic closure device for fire protection, exterior doors, exterior garage doors, passage doors. So any and all of those, you need to describe them. What are they? You know, if I'm looking at a brand new house or a newer house, can't be brand new, it has to be at least a year old to qualify for the 203K. So we're looking at those doors, and we got to describe them a little bit. So these are six-panel, hollow-core interior doors. Or if you have a front door that's a hollow-core door, it needs to be changed to a solid-core door. If you have a garage door that goes from the kitchen or the inside the house to the garage, it has to have a self-closure device on it. If it doesn't, you need to say that and then go down below and write a specification to put a self-closing hinge on it or replace it with a fire-rated door. Okay, solid doors. It can't be a solid door with a doggy door cut in it. You're making it easy for your doggy to get out in the garage, but you're also making it easy for the fire to get in the house in case it starts. And if it's going to start in the house, it's likely going to start at the garage. Okay, so you need to describe what's there. If it's a solid core door with a doggy door cut in it, then you're going to go down to the bottom half and write a specification that says provide, install the door to replace the garage door with a fire-rated door, and then to give them the fire rating that you want. The reason I say provide slash install in all job specifications is because years ago, I had them provide install it was an appraisal I was doing, was an FHA, and I wanted them to install a light switch cover plate in the living room. So I specified provide install a light switch. Excuse me. That kind of caught me off guard. Light switch cover plate in the living room. When I got there, it was not done. And the guy said, well, should I run down and get one? I said, well, yeah. You know, I'll be here looking at the other things. So run out and get your light switch. And then he had this great idea. I will steal the one off a bedroom light switch cover plate and put it on. So now when I write those specs, I write them differently. I write provide install cover plates on all electrical outlets and switches throughout the entire home, including the one in the living room, so they can't just go steal one from another place and put it on, and they will. If you leave your specification open, you know, I see a lot of specs that come across my desk as I'm reviewing things, and it says install a ceiling fan, but it doesn't say purchase it. It doesn't say provide it. It just says install it. Well, who's providing it? I've seen contractors say, well, it doesn't say provide it. It just says install it, so homeowner, bring it to me. Well, no, you've got money in the labor and in the materials. So you're supposed to, the implication is there that they were supposed to provide it, but it's better to be clear. Provide / install on your bid specifications. Interior doors. If you're going to specify interior doors, in your 35-point checklist, you got to describe what's already there. Some of the houses I go in, there are no doors. Somebody stole all the doors. In other cases, they're the original single-panel doors. Some of them are the old wood veneer doors, hollow core, and there may be a hammer damage right in the middle of the door. So you've got to either reskin it or replace it. Contractors are very good at reskinning those doors. Just knock that down, lay a new laminate top piece over it, glue it in place, and you've got a new-looking door. So when you're describing the doors, describe what you saw. They're either six-panel doors, two-panel, three-panel, four-panel, the hollow core. Describe them a little bit. This is not a full-blown home inspection, and I don't recommend that you supply photographs, although you take them. Keep them in your folder. I found over the years that if an underwriter has nothing better to do, they'll go over your pictures until they find something to quiz you about. So they're not required, so I wouldn't provide them. But you need to do this for all 35 categories. We've touched on just on a couple of these things, but I think you have the idea. The key thing is to learn from this is that without this report or a full-blown home inspection in your package that you're submitting to the lender, that you're not meeting the guideline for the HUD consultant. So if you're going to learn to do it right. Line item 35 is typically for miscellaneous items where we have added some contractor notes. As we found over the years that in consulting, the homeowner's told you can't and must not change the scope of work without getting prior approval. And if it's costing money, you got to put that money up in escrow. So what we've done is we've created 8 notes to the contractor. And we put those 8 notes into section 35 right above where the contractor signs the bid specifications. That way he can't say, although he does still, come out there and he calls you up right after it closes escrow and he wants to know, all right, how do I go about claiming the upfront money so I can go get materials? Well, I've only seen that happen one time. The contractor, I replaced another consultant on a job. A lender just had enough, this consultant, and they were going to court against the consultant and vice versa. I get out to do draw number one, and the guy hands me a list of $50,000 worth of materials, and a truck was pulling away as I arrived that had just delivered $50,000 worth of materials. And he says, it's just a materials draw today. I'm sorry, sir. We have to approve draws for installed items only. That contractor literally broke down and started crying. He was so upset. He said the other consultant told me if I could get an upfront draw for the materials, I've got $50,000 worth of material, $53,000 actually. I need to get that money. I got to pay for those materials. And I knew there was a lawsuit going on between the lender and this client, so I got on the phone with the lender and I said, I got some good news and some bad news. I've got some good news because it'll help your lawsuit against the consultant. But I got some bad news because he told the client that he could get all his material money paid up front once the materials were landed on the site. And they found out who the consultant was, and they said, look, I'll call you right back. Stay at the site. And 10 minutes later, I got a call back, and they said, we've authorized you to go ahead and do the materials-only draw. And that contractor was so elated. Anyway, I see that we've run up against a hard break, so we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with you and just as soon as this is over, and be ready for our final segment. If you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008. Toll free. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back.
We know which lenders are all talk and which ones can actually close your loans faster. You can depend on our consultants for the facts before you choose a lender. There are many lenders who will tell you they need 60 to 90 days to close a renovation loan. Those aren't the ones to choose. A 203K can close as fast as a 203B, unless the lender is trying to play all the possible positions on the field. The 203K is a team sport, and you should have the team members that know what to do. If your LO is constantly calling the consultant to see how is it going, you may want to reevaluate that member. Each member has a job. Let them perform their part while you perform yours. The countdown doesn't start until the lender gets your financial information. Visit 203k911.com. We know what to do.
Welcome back. This is Mike Young. Love my renovation project. The MY stands for Mike Young. Love my renovation project. Call us in if you want to be part of the show at 888-627-6008 and be part of the show. We really appreciate it. We were discussing notifying the borrower that no changes to the specifications can happen without going through the proper procedure. And that is to get the change that you want, tell us what it is, get a bid from your contractor for those changes so that the consultant can do their job and verify that that's a fair or reasonable price for that item. It can be on the high side, but we don't want him charging you double or gouging you. And the only way we can do that is if you see us before you sign that change order. The guideline says if it costs money, you're supposed to put that extra money into the construction account, and then we'll divvy it back out to the contractor as the work is completed. How many times has that happened, Mike? Oh, gosh. I haven't seen that happen properly in ever. Every homeowner and contractor seem to get together and do it their own way every time and without any hesitation. So the contractors look at that as gold. When a homeowner wants a change order, that's their chance to get more money for the project. Years ago, I bought a brand new tract home, and I was just so frustrated when I saw a good friend of mine was the heating and air guy on that job, and I called him up and I said, Tom, what the heck are you thinking putting the condenser right outside the sliding glass doors? So I can't leave the door open without hearing that air conditioner going, but I wouldn't anyway. But and then you're putting the entire heating unit directly above my bed in the master suite. Why didn't you put it in one of the lesser bedrooms? And he laughed and he said, Mike, for tract work, we don't get squat. We're taking these tracts at cost just to get our name out there and to get the product. So what we do is we place those things there on purpose, so that you'll call us and have us move it. And we will get paid like we should have been paid for the job. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. So you're going to move that condenser around the corner where it should have been, and you're going to charge me, $400. Wow. And how are you? I'm afraid to ask you how much it costs to move that furnace and so forth from the master bedroom over to a lesser bedroom. I had 7 bedrooms in that house and 5 baths. They could have put it in a lot of different places and not over my bedroom in the master suite. So it just gave me a whole different picture, or something I hadn't realized. Having grown up in the heating and air conditioning business, my dad always did it right the first time. He put it where it belonged. But he wasn't a tract dealer either. He didn't go after the tracks. So anyway, HUD documentation clearly tells the buyer in a couple different ways that they are not to make any changes in the scope of work without providing the information in advance and funding necessary to get the work done. Well, that doesn't typically happen, but the contractor needs to be told the same thing. So in those 8 notes, we have a note that says homeowner and contractor cannot and must not make any changes in the scope of work without going through the following procedure. And then we explain to them, and we do it there so the contractor has to sign right underneath it. The contractor is now on notice, okay, that he cannot and must not make those changes without it first going for approval through the lender. Now, most lenders will have us do that for them because we are working as an inspector for the lender at their convenience, okay, so at their direction. So some of them just say, hey, if it looks good and flies, go ahead and approve it for us. I've turned in change orders, and I don't sign them because it's not finished yet. Change orders cannot be paid until they're 100% complete. They're not like a line item that can be paid 10, 20, 30%, 50% as you go. They must be 100% complete, and if I sign it, I'm saying they're complete, so I can't sign it. I send it off to the lender for their approval. They just look, why did you send it? You didn't sign it. I said, because it's not done yet. Well, don't send it here. We'll pay it accidentally. So you got to learn about your lenders, which ones will let you do it, which ones insist you do it, and so forth. But in those 8 notes that we've added to line our section 35, we've added in there simply because the contractor signs the specs just below that area, and inadvertently they will always call and say, okay, I need an upfront draw. And I said, you have those in front of you? Yeah, look at the last of the notes. Oh, my God, there's no upfront money? I didn't see that. You signed it. But let's get back to the work write-up itself. In 1994, we created a standard for conducting a consultation. When HUD first came out with 203K consultants was in 1994. When I asked Ken Crandall, Ken, what is it you want us to do? He said, Mike, we're going to go a year, and we're going to just let everybody do whatever it is they want to do. And at the end of that year, we're going to analyze everything, and we're going to take the best from Joe and the best from Jim and the best from Bill and Mary, and we're going to put it all together, and we're going to come up with a standard. And I said, I've got 15 W-2 employees that are consultants. I can't work like that. I have to tell them what to do. So I created a scope of work for our consultants. Here's what a consultant should do. Here's how he should do it. Here's when he should do it. And I wrote it up. If anybody's ever worked for McDonald's, they have a very detailed book on exactly what you're supposed to do with each job at McDonald's. And that's what I did way back in 1994 for my consultants. So we were all creating the same list. I turned that into HUD through, you know, Ken Crandall. He was in charge of creating consultants. And our reward was that he, in the early days, he saw to it that our company was put on a HUD website. We were the first for-profit company ever put on a HUD website, according to HUD. 3 years later, I got a call asking if I was a nonprofit organization because HUD only put nonprofit organizations on their website. And I said, no, we're a for-profit. We've always been a for-profit. We're not a, sometimes we're a nonprofit, but it's not intentional. That didn't get a laugh even from them. When I confessed, they asked us to take it. They were going to take it down. And they said to stop telling people that we were there. And I said, why should I stop telling them? Because we don't put for-profit companies on our website. I said, well, I was there, and I should be able to tell people I was there. And they said, can you prove it? So I sent a copy of that page to the person at HUD in D.C. that was asking me not to say it anymore. And she said, oh, my God, you really were. And I said, okay, so you thought I was a liar. Now I'm not. Okay. Anyway, we took it down per her request. But I still tell people when they ask, yes, we were there. And we're proud of that fact. And it was for creating a scope of work for consultants to follow to do a consultation. Let's go back to HUD. One of the things that HUD tells us is that you have to disclose it or disclaim whatever you're doing. This 35-point checklist is not a home inspection. They forced us a few years ago to become home inspectors if you weren't already one. Luckily, we were. But the idea is they wanted us to be home inspectors, another license that could be pulled if we didn't do something right. But in 49 of the 50 states that I'm aware of, correct me if you find that your state is there, but Florida is the only one that allows the home inspector to include repair costs. In fact, I think they require it now. But the rest of the states, all 49 of the other states, say that you cannot put a price to the repairs that you see need to be done. And as a consultant, that's exactly what we do. So every time we do a standard 203K 35-point checklist, we have to disclaim this is not a home inspection. And it doesn't meet the home inspection requirements, standards of practice. Okay? So, in HUD's infinite wisdom, be that, but don't do that. Never could understand that. Still don't. Another place that many consultants are falling down on the job is a consultant is supposed to be creating a scope of work. And I don't know, but I think we're running up on the clock. Let's see if I've got time to get into this thing. Anyway, consultant creates the scope of work and puts a price to it. He does that with the help of the borrower. He does it with HUD's guideline. So we have to add insulation, for instance. We are running up. So we're going to have to pick this up next Sunday, 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And apologize for not getting through it faster. I thought we had it in the bag, but thank you so much for joining us today. Hope you'll be back with us next week. Next week, I think we're going to be syndicated. We're going to be on iHeartRadio. We'll try to get more information as to how and when they're going to post, play that, and we'll go from there. So we enjoyed it. Hope you did. Talk to you next week.
Tune in every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to BBS Radio Station 1 and learn more about making home renovations possible, profitable, and hassle-free. Isn't it time you learned how to make money doing something you loved? Visit 203konline.com now and let's get your home makeover projects done right.